Hey, patrons. I don't know why Adam wasn't loading in there. That was weird.
There I am. Yeah. Hi. Hello.
Hello. how's it going? Apologies for being late. I thought I set an alarm last night, and I guess I didn't, because I woke up at 10:50 and was scrambled. I was scrambling.
The great thing is that chat knew exactly what to do. So I was hanging out in chat, and Sithmaster was like, hey, are we going live? And I was like, oh, there's a little bit of a delay. We'll be live soon. And immediately chat was like, God damn it, Max. So
yeah, I was thinking I could blame Max here. It's technically has nothing to do with Max. It has more to do with the fact that we kept playing until about 3 a.m. And then I decided it was smart to start a brand new Netflix series.
Oh, good. Nice. Mm. That's, yeah.
Until about 3 a.m. yeah, 3 a.m. So The Dragon Prince. It's pretty good.
I was about to say it. Yeah, The Dragon Prince, right?
Yeah. It's pretty good on the Netflix. Yeah, it's pretty good.
There you go.
Yeah. So apologies for being late to both the audience and Adam as well, because I was supposed to be here about 45 minutes ago for Adam, but I'll send whatever I need to for him. Let's answer some questions here. I was thinking I'd show off exactly what we bought in terms of the TriCaster, but I don't have that scene set up. So maybe we'll do that towards the end, and I'll set up a way to show that as the stream progresses on. So if you're a patron and you're watching this right now live here on Twitch, you can go submit questions in that Q&A thread that exists on roleplay or patreon.com/roleplay. If you're watching this in VOD, why didn't you ask a question? What are you doing? I gave you at least 24 hours. It wasn't like this was posted in haste or anything the other day when we realized we needed to do one of these.
Come on.
It's your fault. It's not mine. It had nothing to do with me. yeah, so I guess let's just run down some questions. Have you just got the list? So these are all brand new.
I just got the list. I got to say, I really like how this time we put in another field for What Is Thy Quest, and for the most part, it's Monty Python references. So thank you for that.
Well, the form order should have been What Is Thy Name, and then what is the second question that Tim the Wizard asks?
So it's the Bridge Keeper, and he says, what is your name? What is your quest? And then what's your favorite color?
Mm. Mm-hmm.
And it's the favorite color one that kills the dude, because he's like, blue. No, yeah, and then he gets thrown off.
Yep.
I've watched this movie recently, so I remember all this.
I need to watch it. I don't even know. I should ask Erin if she's seen it before.
What? Oh my God, if she hasn't seen it, that would be amazing. You should definitely show it to her, because it's one of those things that like so much of D&D's like stuff, like initiative and alignment arguments and all that crap, it just gets passed along and people just pick it up and they're like making the references and they're like, oh, I've never actually seen the movie that all of that stuff is from.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I should probably do that. I should probably ask her. Regardless. Hey, here's Tim the Necromancer asking, what is thy name? and he says his quest is to find the Holy Grail. We found him. We found the good guy.
Good job.
right out of the gate, he asks, are the cast members paid? Yes, they are. Cast members for all shows are paid. Simple yes and no question. That one is very easy. Everyone's paid to be on the shows, for sure. From Drew, he asks, what's the likelihood of you creating a spin-off series in the Far Verona universe or sector? What do you think? Is there anything? I mean, we still got a lot of Far Verona to go.
Yeah, like, I mean, there's already a near infinite amount of Far Verona space for the characters to explore. But, I mean, we've done it with Court of Swords, right? Where we've done arcs and three shots. And it's usually something that comes up as a requirement for, like, filling in when we don't have a player, or when we know somebody's going to be away for like a month, or we build it around a specific event, like a live event. So yes, absolutely. There's so much like stuff available in the universe that one campaign will never explore all of it. So yeah, like absolutely. It's just a question of like finding a place to fit it into the already pretty busy schedule.
Right. Yeah.
But yeah. If the opportunity came up, totally. Because there's lots of different systems we could use and different places we could explore.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, I think the answer to that is yes, it's possible. Will we do it? I don't know. There's there's a lot of room on Far Verona.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing is, it's like we haven't talked about it in any concrete way, but if it were the right fit at the right time and we wanted to do it, then yeah, I'm certainly interested. But yeah, like JP says, there's a lot of stuff to do with the main show already. So
yeah. I need to start bolding these questions.
Yeah, so we know which ones we did.
Some of these I haven't read yet, so we're just gonna go straight. Nickanil's asking, could we have an animated background for Court of Swords since you have so much tech? Why not give it a visual overhaul? The most recent stuff is more so that the overlays were working in the sense we can add whatever we want to them. But the Court of Swords overlays are, I would say, temper middle is a way to describe them. Until we kind of get that stuff ironed out, then we'll start adding in the actual, like, bells and whistles for the look of it, because right now it's still pulling all the data from Roll20, and every once in a while there's something that will snag the line there and mess it up a little bit. Adam will have to. Last week was pretty good. We've only had two shows with the new overlays. The first week was pretty rough in terms of stability and what it was actually showing. I'd say last week was better. We only had like one really critical fail in it where it just died. But we're getting pretty good to where Adam can just like fix that in a second, and then we get back to going with it. So, I think that stuff will eventually happen. I don't have a timeline for it, but yeah, I think the current overlays are definitely placeholder for whatever the final version of the Court of Swords stuff is. So,
yeah. This is the thing about building something mechanical for a tabletop role-playing game, in that the great strength of role-playing games is that there is a near infinite number of things that could happen. And so every episode we've found 2 or 3 or 8 or 10 things. We've been like, oh, okay, we got to make the overlay be able to do this. Oh, got to maybe do this. Like we had shape-shifting in the last one where we were like, okay, is it going to work? Is it going to blow up? Who knows? Adding tokens on the fly. Like there are things that we've thought of and planned for and had coded, but there are other things that are like, oh, that's a surprise. Okay, cool. We're going to need to adjust for that. So yeah, we want to make it work really, really well. And then we'll put a bunch of polish on it. But yeah, I've been really impressed with it so far. I think it's super cool watching those hit point bars move around and all the little things pop up.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. But yeah, we're still working on it. And it'll continue to improve as we go.
Yeah. There's definitely chatter on terms of like what font we want to use. I think the last episode we changed the font a tiny bit. It was definitely more readable than the first one. But we're going to, we read the chat. We scan the chat during the show, and we definitely listen to the YouTube comments and the feedback from that. So if you have long bits of feedback, the best thing to do is probably tweet me and Barry on Twitter. We don't really have like a Trello board or anything like that for you guys to go and read or comment on. So I think just send tweets to either, me, Barry, Adam, or Daniel, and it'll kind of make its way into that conversation for sure. Kyle asks, have you guys ever considered doing live shows in front of an audience? I think some of the shows could sell at a small theater. I don't know if they could. And I think that's kind of the hesitation for the longest time to doing something like that, right? Cause like,
right, like,
yeah.
It's very tricky. Like, we can use panels to sort of gauge interest, but panels are also like the audience is already there, though we're competing with other stuff. And I know a lot of shows will do like, we'll do Court of Swords live at PAX, but not really at PAX. It's at this theater that's near PAX and you pay a different thing for that. And like the worst thing is to put down a bunch of money and make a bunch of plans and set it up to do it and then not have people come to the thing. And so yeah, it's really hard to know whether that's going to work or not until you actually do it. It's hard for us because as chat pointed out, the audience is so distributed, right? Like our fans live all over the world. And so we have to target specifically opportunities when they're all in one place, which means that a con is a good opportunity, but I think we're more likely to do like live stuff at a convention, right, as a panel or something like that, before we would do like a separate live from the whatever theater in wherever.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the best chance for that to occur is probably going to be at PAX Unplugged later this year. I think that we are going to try to do like a live show there with roles and everything. Yeah. I don't know what that looks like. I need to follow up with people to see if that's actually a thing. But I think that would probably be the best place. And I pretty much echo everything that Adam said. It's a very expensive test to run a live show out of a you know, small theater type situation. And then if, you know, no one shows up, it's kind of a big loss. So it's definitely a gamble at this point.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's going to happen anytime soon. We've definitely talked about it. We've definitely thought about it. And, you know, maybe in the future, we're not saying no. We're just saying not now, I think is probably the best way.
I think it's one of those things where we know the things that we can do that are going to make good content for everybody, right? We can focus on the live shows and we can do all that stuff. But we're always keeping our eyes and ears open for opportunities. So if somebody came to us and said, hey, we're putting together this like RPG cavalcade, whatever, and we want you to be a part of it, that would be something that we'd be able to consider, right? We're always looking for opportunities. But yeah, like I've definitely, because I've been to the kinds of shows that Kyle is asking about, right? I've seen some of these, the live stuff. You know, I've been to like live podcasts, and they're very cool. But you have to have the right audience for it. Mm. Yeah,
I don't know how we could I don't know if me personally could handle the like shouting from the crowd of like, roll a dude, it's D20 plus 7. It's like, dude, stop. Just fucking don't. Like that.
It's one thing when it's chat, and it's another thing when the audience is like,
yeah, like,
so I mean, yeah,
heckling is an odd thing for a D&D show, but it happens. It's a weird thing. I wouldn't even call it heckling. It's like backseat gaming in life.
It's like if you've ever seen Rocky Horror Picture Show with like people who've all seen it a million times,
yes,
and people are like yelling the lines and like. It's a certain type of experience.
Yeah,
it can be really fun, but I don't know that it's conducive to like playing a good game of D&D. But again, you change the game for the venue, right? Like the way we plan and play and structure the live shows is different than we do weekly episodes. So we would change the way that we would do a game like that if we did it in a live environment. It's an interesting thing to think about, but the practicalities of it have so far been preventative. But like JP says, keep an eye out. This might be a thing we could do at a convention. That'd be a good start, a way to like figure out if it was something that people would be into.
Yeah. Yeah. One of the most, I guess, asked questions, both in this list and just kind of in all the lists that we've done, Pele Bulldogs asking it, Sandtream's asking it. This is just from a quick scan of everyone. Here's another one. Marty Marv asking about it. And it has to do with one shots and if they're coming back. For the longest time, I just didn't do one shots. It's not a hassle, but it's a hurdle to get those schedules, to get everyone rounded up for it, get a date agreed and all that stuff. And you know, same story I've said for the longest time.
Right. This is a thing. Like you're saying that, and I'm like, this, I'm having deja vu because yeah, whenever one shots come up. There's this thing where it's like the amount we do all the work we would do for a full campaign, right? All the work that we would do for a Far Verona or a Court of Swords, for casting, building overlays, learning the system. And then we do a 4-hour show and then we don't, and that's it. It's done.
Yeah.
It's like all that work. So we often would rather build longer term stuff, which does mean that we only get to do one shots like relatively often. But anyway, sorry, JP, go ahead.
Yeah, no. That I agree with everything you said. So with all that said, last month, I ended up hiring I don't necessarily know what, I would call her role, maybe a mini producer or, I mean, I don't think assistant is a proper term. I need to figure out what actually I would call her job title. Basically a mini me. Is someone that I've kind of trained, scheduler, something like that. Yeah. Coordinator, to kind of handle one shots entirely. And so far, we're on time and on point to actually do one on the 24th this month. I guess we can kind of soft announce it. The name's still kind of up in the air right now. And it's soft announced for the 24th this month. So it might change. I'm hoping it doesn't. We got that date confirmed yesterday. It's going to be a Warhammer Fantasy. So not 40K. Warhammer Fantasy is the rule set. Do you know what actual rule? Adam's going to be DMing it for the first one. Do you know what actual rule set it is? Is it Warhammer Fantasy?
It's the brand new Warhammer Fantasy 4th edition rule set.
Cool. And the guests are going to be Dodger, Strippin, Bike Man, and Pocket. For this, I think that's all correct. for this first one, we definitely wanted to do a... we wanted to bring familiar faces for me and Adam in terms of Adam DMing it, and also for the cast to kind of give it as a test. And I think it was a pretty good test because there was definitely a lot of wrangling that the production assistant definitely had to do for that stuff. But I think we're good. I think it was a good test, and we can definitely move forward. We started trying to schedule this about 3 weeks ago, and it just got kind of finalized yesterday. So...
That's like light speed. It's like the flash of a lightning bolt.
Yeah.
In terms of scheduling time, like 3 weeks. It's crazy.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. And then obviously kind of once this one, passes, we'll start trying to do one a month and get back on that schedule. Obviously we'll expand the GMing duties past Adam. In fact, this might be one of the only ones that Adam does, at least for a while, unless he requests that he wants to run something else, because we want to try to bring in some other folk. And then, of course, we have a large library of people that could show up on a one-shot, and we definitely intend on using that. So,
I'm excited about more one-shots because that means I might get a chance to play in the game. That would be fun.
Yeah, totally. I think that's definitely a possibility for sure. But we'll have like a full announcement and everything when we get graphics for that stuff. But it's looking like the 24th is going to be a thing. We don't know what time yet. I don't know if it's going to be a European time zone or if it's going to be an American time zone show, like a 2 p.m. or a 6 p.m. We haven't really decided with that stuff yet. So, but yeah, that's a thing. We're finally getting back on track with all that stuff. And, it was definitely nice. I think that this one, I was a little bit involved and still in kind of the scheduling and whatnot. But it was definitely nice to have someone that handled the bulk of it for sure. It was also a little bit daunting too. When it first started out, I think there was, I wouldn't call it a subtweet, but there was a tweet in regards to this where it was kind of like teaching someone that you've done, that's been so autonomous for so long for you. And trying to pass that along to someone else was a really weird thing. And it made me realize that I would never be a good teacher.
It's one of those things like Twitch as a thing, like as a business, you get really used to doing everything yourself, right? You're like, I'm self-sufficient. I gotta like keep my own schedule and pay the bills and handle everything myself. And then you start working with other people and JP is very, very good at handling everything on his own, which can mean it's very difficult to be like, okay, here.
Yeah.
You can do this thing and not just sit there staring and being like, come on, is it done? Did you do it right? Did you do it exactly the way I would do it? So yeah, it's nice to be able to see someone else take some of that work off of your shoulders for a little bit.
Yeah. There was definitely an interesting conversation too. I'm not sure if Adam was privy to it, but when it first, basically, she kind of, we started off and we were having a conversation like, how are we going to approach these people? What's your normal path? It's like, well, I mean, usually it just depends on the person. Like, person X usually responds best to either texting or using WhatsApp. And she's like, okay, can I have their number? And I'm like, I don't know if we can go that route. We should probably try to standardize it and go email. Okay, here's what that would look like. And then it was kind of like one of those emails that influencers get across the board where it's like, hello, ex-influencer. We love your stuff. We would love for you to be on our show. And then I was like, yeah, let's just kind of like keep it super casual. And that worked out. So it's an odd thing. And I think the other thing that I've definitely like learned in terms of talking with her is that influencers fucking suck at scheduling. I'm doubling down on that. They're just fucking bad.
Yeah.
They're just bad at that shit for sure.
Well, what's funny is like trying to remember what tool to use to communicate with what person. You're like, okay, I need to talk to this person. What's the thing that they do? Should I email them? Do I text them? And then like having six conversations going, and like I've made this joke before, I only have Skype installed for the Court of Swords scheduling conversation. Yeah. That's it. It's the only reason I have that. And this is how it goes, because people just get used to certain things. But yeah, we're working on it. We're getting people together. And as evidenced by this one shot, it's happening. Things are going on.
Yeah. Yeah. It's bad stuff. So yeah, we're super excited to have Fox on the team. And I think as time passes on, you might see her pop up more, whether in stuff like this or maybe even playing in a one shot or something like that. We'll see. We'll see for sure. But with one down, it definitely was a huge amount of work off my shoulders, and that was definitely cool. So shout out to her. Mm-hmm. Here's a question from E-Tan. And I thought about this because I saw it yesterday when it asked. That's kind of a big question. It says, JP, you've recently bought the expensive cameras, equipment, etc. for the live set. At any point in the process of getting the set ready, have you ever wondered if the end result will be worth the cost?
I love this question so much.
I think I think that's a thought that crosses my mind like probably every second that it happens.
This question, the real question here is, have you ever taken a long, hard look at your life and wondered, what's the fucking point? Mm-hmm. Like, this is a deeply existential question framed like, hey, you bought some equipment. What do you think?
Yeah. Yeah. It, I definitely think about it a lot. I think the answer to it is it's worth the cost after about 8 or 9 live shows. As soon as 8 or 9 live shows get put into that TriCaster, then we basically match what we would have gotten for the rental cost. And at that point, it's worth it just to own the equipment. So ask me in 8 or 9 live shows and I'll tell you the answer is, yeah, it's worth it. Right now, no, it's probably not.
You have a bunch of really expensive stuff just hanging out waiting to get used.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely daunting. You can go and figure out the full price list. It's New Tech TriCaster TC1 with a full board and the 4 PTZ cameras. In fact, I think I'll just pull it up here real quick so you guys can kind of see what it looks like. And we've shown this stuff in, also I love this like stock image that they decided to use. these people come with the TriCaster that you buy.
What the hell?
I don't know.
Oh, it's so good.
This is the TriCaster right here that we've purchased. It does 4K 60. We're not getting 4K cameras. This is the board that we got. There's a mini version of this board, but we opted to go for the full board. We can feel invincible. I love this bullshit. It's great. We didn't get these monitors. I think it comes with a monitor. I'm not sure.
The first thing that Scoots and JP did actually was they set it up. Scoots sat down to the board and JP hit him with a baseball bat. And Scoots was like, I didn't feel a thing. I'm invincible.
Yep, that's true. That's true. So here's the board with all the buttons. That stuff is really cool. You can go in and do some research for it. But yeah, this is the thing that we grabbed. Man, it's a beast. It's definitely a beast.
Sitting down in front of a TriCaster is like playing Steel Battalion, but instead of controlling a big robot, you're making content.
Pretty much.
Switches and buttons.
Yeah, yeah. And then PC New Tech. These are the cameras that we grabbed. We got 4 of these. Oh man, this is like Apple looking. This had like a little animation to it. But yeah, these are the 4 cameras. Now we haven't actually used these. That's wrong. We have used one of these in the production. We used Panasonics in the past that we rented. However, the Panasonics for the same 1080 60 run about $8,000 to $9,000. and these run about $2,800 each. And this fall, Panasonic is putting out some 4K 60 cameras. So we opted to grab these and then fall or spring, take a look at those 4K 60s, because there's no point in doing 4K on Twitch in terms of the streaming of it. But it might be kind of fun to have 4K footage in our on YouTube and in the VOD service. So we'll see how that goes. But yeah, all that stuff's purchased. It should be here in a couple of days. Probably next week sometime is what I've been told. So then it'll probably sit there because I'm not opening that shit without Scott.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to... I could potentially try and set it up. It's basically just a fucking computer. There's nothing special about it. But yeah, I'll probably just wait till Scott gets here so we can kind of go through that stuff. So yeah, that stuff is all ordered. And the plan is to kind of set that up. There was also a question. I want to try to find credit for this. Let's see. Where is this at? Someone was basically asking if we could use... Oh, here we go. The first question from Sith Master. Given that UJP will own most of the production equipment for the live RP shows, would you find it possible in the distant future to rent / lease out your studio for other RPG shows / streams like Roll20's crew, for instance? Yeah, sure. I think anything's possible. I think the other thing that this allows us to do... once we kind of get the live shows on track is just to do more stuff to that, add more stuff to that, like doing a bunch of white label productions where we kind of sell the studio and I don't know,
I would love to sit down and brainstorm about stuff that we could do. Like I could fly out 2 days early before I stick around after a live show and you and I could just make some more stuff, like do some streams or whatever in the studio. Like it's really cool not having the time limit on the space. Oh, being able to just be like, hey, JP, I've got an idea for a series that I want to do. Can I use the studio for a weekend and like fly out and make a thing? And like, yeah, I think that would be super cool to do some of that stuff.
Yep. You know, drop frames, doing live drop frame shows is already a thing that we've talked about. So much so is like figuring out dates for that stuff. Covering E3 from the house, that type of stuff exists. There's a bunch of different things that this will open up the door to do. In terms of just different shows and stuff like that. I'm not sure how soon, but it definitely opens the door for all that stuff. And I think the most important thing for that, at least for me, and I think for patrons as well, is that at the core of it, we're still going to try to nail that 4 live shows a year, right? And that's in kind of the roleplay world. It makes it infinitely easier now because we don't have to rent the gear. Scott doesn't have to come and set up the gear. Scott can now fly in on a Thursday, load the graphics in. Everything's going to be set up. People show up on Friday. We do the show Saturday. Then Scott leaves Sunday morning. He doesn't have to pack all this stuff up again. We don't have to worry about getting it back on a truck to the people that we're renting it from. Like, we just own it. So it's going to take a lot of stress out of all the process on so many fronts. So I'm hoping that it will kind of open up a lot of extra doors that way as well. I'm definitely excited for it. We just got to get to the point where it's set up. And then also one of the things too with owning the space and owning all the equipment is that we're actually going to bring out a couple of like professional lighting guys and have them light the set. So it's not me and Scott kind of, just like judging it. Mostly Scott kind of just judging it. Because Scott's not a light guy. He'll be the first person to tell you that. So yeah, all that stuff will be happening in the next couple of months. And we're hoping to do at least a couple of live shows here towards the end of the year for sure. So now we just got to get all the stuff. I just want it to show up already. I placed the order Tuesday. And it's an odd thing, too, in terms of the actual process for how that stuff works, because New Tech is basically a Ford and a car company world, and they give dealers the right to sell that stuff, but the dealers don't own the cars. They have to go back to New Tech. They haggle the price with New Tech for you, and then they offer you the quote. It's a really weird situation when it comes to buying that type of stuff, but yeah, it's an odd thing. Anyways, we should push on with some more questions here. Any that have grabbed your eye, Adam?
No, there's lots of good ones. Let's see. Somebody asked. I'll let you find one. I'll answer this one because it's about Quarter Swords. So, Dakaros asked, for the latest Quarter Swords episode, was Day 9 consulted beforehand about how his kingdom has been developed since he left? Also, similar question about other guests' impact on the show after they left, if it's not too spoilery. So, yeah, like I try to reincorporate, especially arcs where the character has like kind of accomplished something that changed in the world. I try to incorporate what they did to the future story so that I can bring it back, right? So since like Max is playing a gnome, obviously we've been talking a lot about what happened with the gnomes in Court of Swords. You know, I'll be thinking potentially for future stuff if we do like a focus on Heaven, like what happened with Anne's character. You know, fans who have been paying attention have put together that Kalimat's dagger has a connection to Morgan's character. And I think the answer to this one specifically, like I haven't talked to Sean about Persnigitron, but I feel comfortable like being able to do that. I've got a pretty good idea about what happened after he left.
Totally.
But it depends. It depends on the other players too. Like it would be much easier for me to reach out to Anne, for example, and be like, hey Anne, what do you think of this? Are you interested in feedback? And I definitely, if they decided to like go back to the Shulin Valley, I would reach out to Sean and ask him. But yeah, I find that like for the most part, players kind of want to say their piece and then be done. And if I ask, most of the time the response is, I don't know, do whatever you want. So I feel pretty comfortable. I think I have a good handle on what Sean's character was like and what a kingdom run by him would be like. So.
Yeah,
but yeah, I love the idea of reincorporating, and it's been a big deal for me, like as far as we've had guests on the show, to make sure that their characters had some kind of impact on the world at large that stuck around, and so it's really cool being able to go back and do that.
Totally, yeah,
yeah.
Dallin 9, our resident stats guy, says, "Do you guys have any suggestions for additional stats graphs that I could add to the role stats?" I don't know off the top of my head. I think it would be cool if you start like figuring out like tying it to historical data in the sense of like this is the highest roll ever achieved in roleplay or this is the you know the seventh consecutive fail on X roll for so and so person, right? Like that's
like pretty cool. There's two things as far as data goes, right? Like there's all the stuff you can collect, and then it's what do you do with the things you've collected? And this is where we get shit like achievements. Like, congratulations, today was your 100th natural 20 as this character. Good job. Yeah. You know, like it's, yeah, biggest streaks. It's because that's the data in and of itself is cool to look at, but then you start looking at patterns or spikes or dips, and that's the cool stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. I like this is all like we'd have to think of achievements to give people. Yeah. Like fastest level up or most number of goals in a single season.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Highest one turn damage is cool. Like most use spell, highest damage on a single spell, highest damage on a single attack. Like that type of stuff would definitely be cool.
Well, because inevitably that's the thing that happens. You watch anytime anyone casts an AoE spell.
Yeah.
And JP is always the one that does this. We'll be doing the damage, and then JP you'll tell us like, oh, you did this much damage total. You multiply it by the number of targets and like check all those things. Like we're definitely interested in those those kinds of things. But
for sure.
Collecting as much data as makes sense and then figuring out kind of like what kind of cool patterns to look for in it. I don't know anything off the top of my head, but there's lots of little kind of like neat things we could look for.
Yeah. I wonder how invasive to a broadcast it would be if we gave Dallin some sort of like GUI that would allow him to basically like push these stats onto the stream live without us knowing. It would just happen. Like, hey, this is the, you know, single biggest hit in Court of Swords history or something like that. Like that could be something that we do. I don't know if you're interested in entertaining something like that, Dallin, but it'd definitely be kind of cool to have that stuff.
Yeah.
I just don't know if that, I don't like, that might kind of, I don't know if that has a place necessarily in a live production of kind of an RP themed show, or an RP.
Yeah, it feels show. Like somebody mentioned in chat, and it totally feels to me like something that would fit on like a break screen. Like, did totally. You know, like in episode 16, the highest amount of damage ever done in a 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons game on roleplay was done. It was this character with this spell. And this is the situation, right? Like little, like essentially loading screen, but instead of tips, it's like little FYI things about the campaign. And I think that's really fun stuff to look at too.
I would agree. Let's see, what else do we got? PDX Bacon asks, have you ever thought of running an evil campaign? I think any time you run a campaign with players, it's mostly evil. Like,
I was gonna say, so have you been watching Far Verona?
Yeah, they're like, they're not nice people. Anne's kind of
very bad people.
Anne's an evil character for sure. I mean, we did Bounce Power Dark Side, which was definitely like an evil campaign
that was explicitly from the beginning. We were like, this is going to be a campaign about the bad guys in the universe.
Yeah.
So we've definitely done it. But I mean, ultimately, like most D&D games that are run as is tend to be pretty villainous in the sense that like you just run around killing shit and people lip you off. You shoot them in the back of the head. Like, yeah, D&D characters by default are kind of nasty. The trick with like evil campaigns as a concept is that evil characters don't often get along or work together very well, right? If you're playing a game where all of the characters are evil, they're all villains, they will often come to a conflict with each other pretty quickly where you're like, well, no, I want the thing that I want. You want the thing that you want. And bye, I guess.
Yeah.
It's hard. Like with good characters, it's much easier to say, we are all good. We are fighting evil together. But it's not often that you're like, we're all evil. And we're going to do the same evil thing together as friends.
Right.
Evil people don't have friends.
That's true.
Which is why you need things like Far Verona, and you need like Balance of Power. Like they both work for a larger evil hierarchy that keeps them contained together. It's like you all work for a bigger, tougher bad guy that is running the show. Yeah. It's like lawful evil. Exactly.
JH the Hurricane says, what are you going to do the inevitable Lance mech RPG one-shot miniseries / show? The game looks too cool to not be on roleplay. I'm going to try my hardest to make sure that's a one-shot in the coming months, because, man, that thing looks really cool. If you don't know what we're talking about, what is that Twitter account? Is it just Lancer RPG?
I think so. I'll take a look. Lancer RPG. So this game, if you haven't seen it, it's the game that's being designed by the artist and creator of Kill 6 Billion Demons, which is a comic book. It's a huge inspiration for a lot of bits and pieces of Court of Swords. And so he's making this RPG that is about weird giant robots. We retweet it all the time. The thing about Lancer is it's not done yet, right? So it's not a finished game. And also, it's already like 480 pages or something. So it's like, it's huge. It's a lot to digest. And there's sort of, if we want to do like a production version of the thing, I would rather wait until the game is like finished and then give it a once over. But yeah, it does look super cool. And obviously, because the person who's making it is an amazing artist. So.
Yeah, the mechs there are super crazy. The media here is not showing all of it, but this stuff is super crazy. Abaddon is the artist for it that throws a lot of this stuff out. So it's really cool. We don't really have any plans for one shot yet, but yeah, kind of what Adam said. We're just waiting. I definitely am interested in playing that show that game in a show.
If I could like, because I would love to play it too. I want to play in it. If I could have my ideal person to run it, it would be Austin Walker, because Austin loves giant robots.
Yeah, he does.
He loves giant robots. He's super awesome as a GM, and I know that he's taken a look at this too. So that would be my dream, to get to play in that game. But yes, we're interested. It's on the radar, but there's a few things between obviously here and there.
Yeah. Here, we'll ask this question from Adam. Not you, but another Adam.
Not me.
He says, what are your thoughts on Oddballs so far? Is there any content planned with Adam and Jesse together in the future? We definitely want to do like a sit down, like, hey, how's your campaign going with Jesse? I had asked him if he wanted to be here for this specifically, but he had some other obligations this morning, so we couldn't. But yeah, my thoughts on Oddballs are that it's great. I think every show I see Jesse like pull stuff that he's either learned from Adam or that was used with him in another campaign that he's played in. He definitely pulls in a lot of that stuff. I've seen him kind of have some very interesting stuff occur in that show. And I think the other thing too is the cast is really good at using what Jesse throws at them, which I think is very important for any DM to just be invested in the game, and that cast is. And so I think that show, like, really, it works out for sure. It's cool.
Yeah, I had a chance to talk to Elsbeth and Jesse both at PAX about it and kind of their experiences so far and everything that Jesse was telling me. Because I've gotten to watch bits and pieces of the show, but I haven't sat down and watched like every episode. But yeah, from what Jesse was telling me, that he succeeded at what I think made Nebula Jazz work the way that it did, was that he sat down with his players and they all got on the same page and they've stayed on the same page. They're all referring to the same stuff. They're kind of working together, which makes it have a harmony that you need for a game that's like goofy and comedic, which is cool. Yeah. And so it's one of those things that, I asked him, I was like, so is there a you in your game? Like, which of your players is the Jesse Cox of your game? And he's like, well, I kind of think we all are, which I thought was really cool. It's good to understand your players and kind of what they're after. So.
Yeah. I would agree with that. Another question from Etan, kind of a fluff question. We haven't had one in a while. What would someone have to give you for you to shave your head, including facial hair? What's the threshold for that to occur, Adam? Is it money?
I don't.
It's an odd question.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm
because for me it's money. That's what happened already. I shaved my beard for Gillette a long time ago, and that was the thing. So
yeah, like a cooler, better beard. Like I don't. I don't know. Yeah. A wizard loses all his power if you shave his beard. So I need that. Don't take that away from me.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if I would ever shave my head fully unless it was like some crazy charity goal. I've definitely thought about it as you get older, you tend to lose your hair. And I've thought about just shaving my head, but anytime it gets brought up, Aaron's just like, don't do that. That'd be a bad idea.
I've done it not as an adult. Like I shaved my head when I was like 20, I think. And
yeah,
like it's not the having a shaved head that's weird. It's the waiting for it to grow back, and like the awkward, like you don't really have a haircut in between. You just kind of have to like figure out your it's an awkward thing to go through.
Yep. It is.
Yeah.
It definitely is.
I like the way that I look, so I'm good. I don't think
Right. Pell or Pele? Probably Pell. Have you ever thought about going back to running limited campaigns like Bounce Power, etc.? I think that thought comes up. Right now we're pretty happy with kind of the two shows that Adam's running and the show that Jesse's running. I think that that's right at the threshold for content on the channel, that if we added another show to the mix on a week-by-week basis, like, it would put the channel in a weird spot for me personally, because I like streaming just in general. I like doing shows in general. I don't like it when one of those things overtakes the other, and right now there's a pretty good harmony or balance on the channel right now. In regards to that stuff, we have 3 days of shows throughout the week, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then all the other days I'm usually streaming myself for the other 3 days, and then Friday's kind of the day off. So I like that that balance. I think if it ever got to be slightly more skewed towards shows, the idea of putting it all on its own channel would be something that crosses into my mind, but that's a really big thing to tackle. And it's definitely like passed in my mind for some time now, but there's a giant hurdle that impedes that right now. Cause it's like, if we do that, we lose everything that's been built on this channel in terms of structure. Do we rename this channel and I go make my own channel, which then hurts that stream? Like it's an odd thing for that. In a perfect world, I'd love to just like control C this channel and then put it over here and control V that channel. Then we just let those two channels kind of live. But it would be I don't know. It's an odd thing. And I think if we added any more to it right now, that process would have to be sped up in terms of if it happens. I think it's inevitable that it's going to happen somewhere down the line. I just don't know when or where or what that looks like. But eventually, like with the way that the TriCaster is kind of making things occur and looking forward to all that stuff, I think that stuff will eventually happen. I just don't know what it looks like in terms of shows being on another channel and me kind of having my own. But we'll see. We'll see.
Well, yeah, and that's the thing, right? And this is sort of the inevitability. Like, anyone who's at all familiar with the career arc of, like, I don't know, I'm going to go with, like, a famous rapper. You start off small and you, like, do your own thing and you build that and you get to a point where you're like, cool, I'm making albums and stuff, but I also want to boost other people and like make a bigger space and be responsible for like a record label. Right. And so what's happening, you can see the exact same stuff happening with Roleplay, where it's like, cool, we have a bunch of people who are really good at making cool stuff and they're all doing it under this like Roleplay thing that JP is producing. He's the center of.
Right.
But splitting it off and being like, this is, you know, me over here doing my thing, but I'm also like the founder of this other thing and I'm in charge of it, but it's in a different space. And you lose people when you divide like that. And we want to create an experience that's the best for like people to watch and like for them to be able to stay connected to this stuff, and giving them two different places to follow or like confusing that can be difficult.
Totally.
So yeah, it's something we talk about a lot and try to kind of figure out. But like JP said, I think the addition of a physical studio, the idea of like a role play studios, that throws another, admittedly, like pretty cool wrench into the works.
Totally.
And so forces us to continue like thinking about how that works. And also like Twitch will continue to make features that will complicate our business, right? Twitch will throw out stuff and be like, here's a new thing, or like tabletop is getting its own category and like these things are occurring. And so we have to keep that into account. You're always aiming at a moving target. So,
yeah. I think you can kind of see the, I guess one of the best case scenarios for this right now with Critical Role, where they split off to be their own thing, with when they do Critical Role on Thursdays now, it's streamed to /Geek and Sundry, and it's also streamed to /Critical Role. And I think that's a pretty good way to handle it, because audience-wise, /Geek and Sundry dominates on that viewership scale. And those numbers actually have not dwindled. So, and to be honest, I haven't looked at /Critical Role to see kind of what audience is there, but it's an odd thing, because one of the best things in Twitch in terms of getting people to watch your content is when that follower count gets built up, that's an immediate, you know, X amount of people that it gets blasted out to. And the second that you go and put that on a new channel, and you go from, you know, 350,000 to 8,000, those people lose that message. It's very odd.
It's interesting too, because a big part of role play, as I see it, a big part of role play sort of brand is helping bridge the gap between role players and non-role players, right? Like the people that we have on our shows aren't like necessarily always big RP people. They can be like esports personalities or, you know, StarCraft players or like people who you might not assume would be into playing tabletop RPGs. And we can introduce those people. And in the same way, folks who are part of JP's audience for the video game stuff, people who might tune in to be like, oh, I'm going to watch JP playing this Call of Duty Battle Royale game, might be like, oh, wait, you also do tabletop RPG stuff? I've heard about this D&D thing. I'm going to tune in and watch that. So there's a benefit to having weird, different content. Like my channel is the same way, right? Where it's like, I'll do GM prep and stuff there, which you would expect, but I also play video games and there's crossover. I'll get Yakuza fans who are like, oh, you're also the GM for this thing? I didn't know that. I'm going to check that out. So cross-pollination is a really important part of success on Twitch generally.
Totally.
So splitting up and siloing that audience is, it's tricky. It's really tricky.
It's and then there's definitely the thought of, you know, with if we split off and do our own channel with role play, where does Drop Frames live in that, right? Because it can't stream Drop Frames on / role play, but it's not just a show about me. So do we kind of bring this company that houses all of this stuff for the past year and put that in the forefront? But then viewers are like, well, what the fuck is that thing? We've never heard of this thing at all. And why is that streaming roleplay?
Yeah.
Show called roleplay on this show called CFP? Like, what is that about? So it's weird.
Yeah. And the idea of having a roleplay channel and being able to say like, okay, this is like roleplay studios. So why is a video game commentary talk show on a thing called roleplay studios? So.
Yeah. It's weird. Yeah. It's a weird thing. I've definitely put a lot of thought process into it, and spent a lot of time talking with like Adam and Scoots and some other people at Twitch and how that would all work. And there's just no easy answer right now. But I think there will come a time where an answer will have to be had, and we can kind of move forward with that stuff. So I don't know. Who knows? Mm-hmm. We'll see what the future holds with that. What else do we got here? Here we go. From Zivas Rail, I think is how I pronounce that. I hope I'm not screwing that up. What is your favorite piece of media to come out of the Far Verona faction Discord? I think my favorite thing is the physical pamphlet that you guys got at PAX. I heard about that.
I have mine on my desk.
Yeah. Prism like made an actual pamphlet.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And gave it to them.
Yeah. An in-universe ad for data packages. Apparently, net neutrality has died in the future. It's a dystopian universe, the universe of Far Verona. I mean, God, like for me, again, like surprise, surprise, the media company faction has made a bunch of really cool stuff. The Prism commercial, the like stinger, was the first thing, one of the first video things that I saw, and that was super cool. You know, I really like the fan events. I really like there was a House Crux hosted a rock concert, like RP event, not that long ago.
Oh, nice.
It's hard to pick a favorite because there's so much good stuff already. I'm just blown away. I personally really like stuff that is like in universe, like really nicely designed and represents like product design or industrial design in the universe. Acre did like a brand, package. Somebody in Acre works in marketing because they did like a brand package of like corporate logos, a set of like fonts that are like, these are the usable fonts. And then they mocked up some products that I thought was really cool. That's the kind of stuff that gets to me, the little things.
Yeah. That stuff's cool for sure.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of specific stuff. I know that there's an artist out there that's kind of become the de facto artist for a lot of people when it comes to like character art and stuff within the Discord, that has been tweeting a bunch of stuff, and they reached out and potentially want to do some of the cast members, which would be cool.
Yeah,
for
Martin.
Sure.
Yeah. Martin Pater has done a ton of really cool sort of like watercolor art. There was an art piece of two UPC members, the Admiral and Rosa. That I saw a little while ago that was commissioned that I thought was super cool. I just love that we're creating this like space that people are so inspired by that they're either making art themselves or they're like paying people to make art for them.
Right.
Like the idea that we've made a universe and now as a result of that inspiration, there are artists getting paid to do their art. So good. It's such a like a nice feeling.
Totally. Yeah. That stuff's really cool. Could someone link Martin's Twitter? I don't know it off the top of my head, but yeah, if anyone knows that in chat, it's twitter.com/MartinPeter, PEDER. Martin is MARTIN. Just combine those two names and you've got his Twitter.
there you go.
From Hyoren, does your live show set have proper ventilation? This has this question, not only on this channel specifically about roleplay, but also in Matt's, both Evil Matt and Good Matt's Twitter feed, I've seen this question pop up. You guys are really worried about ventilation and AC in all these rooms. It happens so many times to see this stuff. If not, how we deal with the heat and smell of 8-hour live show? Yeah. No, there's AC that pipes in there. There's a vent in the back left-hand corner of that room that pops up that will be fine. And to be honest, that room will not get that hot, I don't think. It is a closed-off room, but I guess you can't really know how hot it's going to be until we get five bodies in there and three cameras. But I don't think it's going to... Like, the basement of this house stays pretty cool for all that stuff. But yeah, that question pops up so many times across so many different Twitter feeds that I just think it's hilarious. So thank you for the question regardless. I'm glad to finally answer that one. We got about 5 minutes or so. There's so many questions about the one-shot stuff.
Yeah, yeah. People are excited about one-shots.
They are.
Which is good, because we're going to give one to them.
Yeah, they are. Here's a question I haven't really read too much through. Slightly Obscene asks, in regards to the difficulty to setting up one-shots, have you considered making a generalized graphic for them that can be slightly adjusted for the themes of the show? Yeah, that's probably how we're going to handle it. It might not be in the first one-shot that we do. In fact, I think the current actual title of the first one-shot is Roleplay One-Shots, : Warhammer Fantasy Roleplay with Adam Coble. That's a little long. So we're going to try to like figure out the best naming conventions for that stuff. Roleplay One-Shots in itself is very long to begin with. Because then you have to kind of have whatever the actual one-shot is below that stuff right now. So... I don't know. We definitely will get some sort of standardized graphic for it, though, moving forward, because it makes absolutely zero sense to create an entirely new brand and for each show when we could just kind of house that all under one thing. So that is the plan. We're just not there yet. Beck asks. J Brackett, I think he meant JP. It's right next to the P. Is there? I'm not making this is how it was typed.
I'm gonna post here. I'll post it in the chat. It's amazing. There was a keyboard problem submitting this question.
Yeah, young J Brackett. Is there a race or monster in D&D that you hate as much as Adam hates gnomes? I don't know if Adam hates gnomes. Is that a thing?
I think gnomes are stupid. Okay. I think that they are, as presented in core Dungeons and Dragons, I think that they exist in an intersection between dwarves and halflings that we don't need.
Okay.
I don't think they need to exist.
All right.
But I hate them a little bit.
Is there a race or monster in D&D that you hate as much as Adam hates gnomes? No. I think generally, like,
for example, Max hates rust monsters.
He hates rust monsters.
That's my fault, but yeah.
Yeah. I'm trying to think if there's anything like that I don't like. I think I hate goblins because I've always fought goblins and they're always there in the first three levels of D&D. They're inescapable.
Oh yeah.
Like if you've played D&D, you've probably fought goblins before, and I hate that.
There is a list. Yeah, there is a list of it, and this is the thing. It's like listening to an album, right? Everybody listens to the first like one or two tracks of the album way more than the last track. So yeah. You've all maybe fought a beholder. Everybody's fought a beholder like maybe once, a dragon once or twice, you know, an Umber Hulk one or two times. But like you have fought goblins, wolves, giant rats, fucking carrion crawlers about a billion times.
Oh, yeah.
Like you just keep playing level one over and over, so you just keep fighting those like crappy kobolds.
Yeah.
Which is why whenever they release a monster manual or whatever, something like it, my favorite thing is when they expand on
the low level
goblins, kobolds. They give you either new low level stuff or they're like, here's now you have 15 different kinds of goblin and they're all, you know, CR 1 or 2. That stuff is really cool.
I wish they would just create new low-level shit. Like, just create an entire new race of low-level shit and make that an entire book for D&D. Is like, here is CR 1 through 5 of all low-level shit.
Right, like, they released Mordenkainen's, which is like, cool, here's all the, like, CR 10 stuff. And you're like, cool, I'll use one of these once, ever.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, so I love it. I love the idea of, like, a low-level supplement that's just like, here's a bunch of really fun, cool shit you can do from level 1 to 5.
You know, it isn't an adventure. You know what they should do, Adam? They should play Dragon Quest 11 and take a look at the monsters in Dragon... Have you played DQ 11? Have you seen that game at all?
I have not, no.
Oh, man, there's some good monsters at the start. There's, like, over 300 to 400 monsters in that game, and they have names like Chump Stump. And it's just like a stump.
I really, yeah.
And he's got like a big nose and he looks like a chump. It's great. It's fucking great. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's
yeah, like... I think this is the thing that I'm enjoying about Court of Swords, is that we're finally in a place where I can use like high CR stuff. And that's really cool. But God, it took forever to get here.
Totally.
And I'm not a big fan of starting a campaign at like a later level, because I think you need the context of kind of like leveling up to be able to figure out the game as you go.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's been nice getting into that place. But yeah, I definitely feel like the game should be more pyramid shaped with more content at the bottom.
Yeah.
And less at the top.
I agree. There's a guy named Bongo Drongo, and it's like a Majin Buu looking dude from fucking Dragon Ball, and then he's got a giant drum with like a gnarly, mean looking face on it that tries to eat you. Oh, it's so good, Adam. The character models are fucking amazing.
It sounds
in that
like
game.
It sounds like the monsters in Earthbound, where it's like,
yes,
angry lawyer, or yeah,
they're so good. There's a guy named the Cruel Cumber, and it's a cucumber that has like a pike, and he's got a real fucking mean face. Oh, it's so good. I'm only like 6 hours in, and I've seen like...
I'm looking at a picture of him right now. He looks great.
When he dies, he falls back, and the trident stabs him in the chest, and then he disappears. God, it's so good. Yeah, he's got the stanky leg, so he's on like one leg, kind of. It's man, what a game. What a game.
It's good stuff.
Yeah. All right, I think we're good for the Q&A.
All right.
Thanks for keeping us honest with this. I know a lot of people were... I think we skipped July. Or no, we skipped August. We didn't do a Q&A at all in August. So we need to double up in the future. September has just been kind of crazy in terms of... August was kind of crazy in terms of Adam was just traveling a shit ton. And con season. And then now like video games are coming out. So we just have like crazy amounts of stuff to do there. Or at least I do. Adam streams those games as well. But they just kind of dominate the channel sometimes. So... we still want to do with them as much as possible. I think we definitely want to bring other folk in, like Jesse and maybe other cast members to do this stuff. So, that's it. Anything you want to add, Adam, about anything?
No, I'm glad that we're in a place where we can do like regular episodes and I'm making stuff and doing GM prep, and I'm really excited about both Far Verona and Court of Swords right now. Like, I think they're both... That last episode of Far Verona was just so good. It's the best one so far.
I agree.
And I'm just feeling really good about that stuff. And it's going to be fun to take Warhammer for a spin. I hope people will tune in for that. I'm going to do some... I'll probably do a GM prep and like mechanisms like overview stream sometime between now and then. Maybe the weekend before we do the one shot, just so that people can get an idea, because it's a new edition, it's a brand new game. So I'll probably do a stream of that, and we'll talk about it and stuff. So
yeah,
I'm super excited.
Yep, we'll have like full details on that in terms of what it's going to look like. But the cast members are Dodger, Pocket, Strippin, Bike Man. It's going to probably be on the 24th. We're not sure if it's going to be like 2 p.m. or 6 p.m. yet. We're trying to figure that out. Adam's GMing it, and we're going to move forward with one shots from that stuff. So. We talked about that at the start. So that is it for us. Once again, shout out to everyone for all the support. When the TriCaster and the cameras show up, I'll definitely do like an unboxing video, I guess, of that stuff, so you guys can see it, and I'll post it to Patreon. And yeah, I guess we'll see you next Tuesday for more Court of Swords. It's been nice being as regular with all the shows that we... I think Court of Swords took a little bit of a break there last month where we didn't play for like 3 weeks because Burning Man and stuff like that. But it's nice that, you know, we finish a show and it's like, all right, see you guys next Tuesday. And then everyone shows up on Tuesday. They just magically appear. It's good. We're out of here, though. Thank you for watching. I'm going to delete this VOD on Twitch. So if you want to watch it and you missed it from the beginning, you got to be a patron. Patreon.com/roleplay. I think this is just base level. So no matter what tier you pledge at, you can watch this video. So
yeah,
that's it. We'll see you guys next time. Bye-bye.
Bye, everybody.